letting me be here with you again. Don't let me forget my cookbook. One of you ladies tell me on the way out, did you get your daughter's cookbook? I bought one for her. I appreciate y'all putting together. I'm excited about the new camp and everything. And I can tell you something that happened to me last time I was out here, the only time I've ever been out here. I was going home, stopped down here at the convenience store on the left on 185 or whatever highway that is. And when I pulled up, there was this guy pumping gas, and he, to be honest, he was pretty mean looking. And I was talking to my wife on the phone, and I said, this guy's staring at me, and I don't know why. And I said, you don't hear from me in a little while, remember I love you. And I went in and piddled around in the store and come back out, and he was still out there, and he wasn't pumping gas anymore. And I looked him over, and he looked like he was a lot better shape than me. So I figured I couldn't whip him, and I knew I couldn't outrun him. And I started to get in, and he steps over towards me, and he said, "You a preacher?" I said, "Yes, sir." He was younger than me, but I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You married me." Well, I still didn't know whether I was in trouble or not, but anyway. He said, "This is my wife over here," and I didn't know him. It was one of those deals where somebody backed out on him, and I stepped in, and I remember it was a sweet little couple. I felt so sorry for that little girl. She did everything for her wedding. I mean, everything. Apparently, her mother was kind of out of the picture. She did everything, planned everything, rented everything. Apparently, he didn't do much of anything. But anyway, they're still happily married, as far as I know. Or married. I don't know about happily. But anyway, you talking about a bad day. That poor girl was just, you know, stressed out of her mind trying to get everything ready and didn't even get anybody to help her out to even do something as minor. Well, it's actually pretty major, but somebody could have done this for her, to go to Walmart and pick up a wedding cake. She even took that on herself. And she went there, and we ended up waiting an hour and a half for her to get there. And the reason we waited an hour and a half, she went to get her cake, and the lady turned around and said, "How do you like this?" and dropped it in the floor. Splat on her wedding cake. So she gonna remember her wedding day for a long, long time, and not necessarily for the right reason, but they're still married. And he didn't beat me up, and I'm happy. So that was a good thing. All right, I don't know if I can talk an hour. Last time I didn't mind doing it, but this is a little tougher topic. Now you're recording this, and there's some questions I'm going to ask. It may not be real good to ask on this, because for one thing, I want you to talk back to me. Okay, I'll get to the material in just a minute, but I want to do a little survey here and get your information, get some information from you, and if you answer wrong, we're not going to say you're wrong. Okay. It's just an answer. Why are churches in America not growing? Now, please don't make the mistake of saying the church is not growing. Churches are growing. They're not growing in America. Now, I don't know if you knew this or not. I'm going to talk a little bit and let you think this over so you can give me an answer. We tend to think that all these churches, like Hillview Heights and all that, is indicative of the fact that churches are growing in America. Southern Baptist, largest Protestant denomination in America, they've lost members, they've stopped growing, they're not baptized as many as they were. Methodists have been in drastic decline for the last 20 years. They've kind of put a stop to that, mainly because they became fairly conservative again. That's what kind of slowed their decline down. So, anyway, as a general rule, we're not anywhere near keeping up with the population growth in America. Why are churches not growing? I'm going to write the answers that you give me. Why are churches in America not growing?
Cares of the world.
Cares of the world. What else?
People think they can make it without God.
Very good answer. Sad answer, but it's a very good answer. That's what else?
It's not politically correct in this day.
You need to give of yourself, and people are selfish.
I think our morals have kind of dropped too. Yes, prayer and devotion to take it out of schools.
Good answers.
We're probably actually losing some potential Christians to Islam.
Prayers for those high school. New religions. Let's just say new religions. Really, there's not that many going to Islam, but the trend is what they call. A lot of young people will say they're not religious, they're spiritual. What that means is they want a religion that they kind of write the rules on. But I mean, Islam is growing, but not. It's growing more by immigration in America. Every once in a while, you got something.
The reason I said that, we happened to drive by the one on Morgantown Road a few weeks ago, and most of the time, you stereotype that as Middle Eastern.
Right. We tend to think of Arabic, and that's only
20%. There's a lot of Caucasian white people standing in the park lot. So I'm thinking, are these Bowling Green's people going to their?
No.
Islam church?
No, I mean, a lot of visitors. Western trots every religious diversity or diversity class out there to say they witnessed it, but that wouldn't have been that. No, it's just, see, one thing I like to do, and I know we have a lovely teacher, retired teacher, may have more teachers. One thing about teaching that I like to do is to make sure we're saying the right thing and giving proper information. Down in Murfreesboro, you've seen it on the news. Down in Murfreesboro, they've had a lot of protests stopping the mosque, trying to stop the mosque. See, what people don't realize is that building a mosque is not going to promote the number of Muslims. What they really need to realize is there's already that many Muslims in the community to need that big mosque. That ought to be the thing that kind of gets people's attention. They're already there. It's just people hadn't realized it. And like you say, there's supposedly 5,000 or 6,000 Bosnians just in this immediate area, and most of those are Muslim. What else? Why aren't churches growing? As far as you know. All right, what can we do about the things that y'all have mentioned? If you know part of the problem, what can we do about it? What's the solution?
Teach them different.
All right, that's great. Teach them differently. How are we teaching? Just by personal example.
Satan's putting out too many things to lure people.
Well, I agree with that. There's no doubt about that. Satan hadn't quit working. But I'm gonna tell you this. Now, don't hear me right on this, okay? I believe the Bible teaches there's a devil and there's a hell. I believe both of them, okay? But I believe you can take the devil out of the equation. We'd still manage to mess up pretty good on our own. In fact, we'd create some things. He doesn't even need to help us. We'd create some things. But what do you think we can do? Teach, okay? That's part of what we're getting. This whole thing is going to be about good teaching, good instruction. This the Vacation Bible School for the adult, well, for everybody here. How do we go about teaching? See, what we've done is we teach in church, and that's what we're supposed to do. Church is a teaching institution. Now, churches don't always do a good job of teaching, because here's the truth of the matter. Our society, now I think we're a little different, but we may be in danger of losing some of it. In churches across, we've always stressed learning the Bible, and we've done a pretty decent job of teaching it, but a lot of churches now are more into entertainment than they are actual teaching, because to be honest, sometimes teaching can be kind of a boring process, and so they're trying to be creative and they're entertaining. And what I'm finding out in teaching these college students is you got a bunch of kids that go to church all the time, they don't know anything about the Bible. And I mean, that's a hyperbole, but they don't know much. I mean, I can tell them stories. I'm talking college kids. I'm talking some of them in their 30s, the, you know, non-traditional students. I can tell them the story of David and Goliath, and they're just like little kids hearing this great story for the first time. I remember one time I was telling a story about David and Bathsheba, and this woman said, "Lord, they carried on awful back then, didn't he?" I thought everybody knew that story. This is a grown woman, had two kids. One of them I ended up teaching one of her kids. It's the first time she heard it. She grew up in Monroe County where there's a Church of Christ for every 550 people in the county. She didn't know the story of David and Goliath. She'd gone to church. How'd she miss that? Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? We need to teach, but we've kind of got it down pat where we teach each other in our church buildings, but somehow or another we're not getting the message outside of our church buildings. I don't have the answer on that, by the way. I'm struggling with it. I don't have the answer. For one thing, we've got to recreate in the people's, the public's mind, the need for God, as you've mentioned, because people think they can live their life fine without God. And from a material point of view, they can. That's part of the curse of being an affluent nation, is we got everything we need. One of the saddest statements, I think it was Augustine said, one of the saddest things is to say that you have everything you need when you don't have God. That's what a lot of people are saying, not verbally, but that's what they're saying with their lives. I've got a car, I've got a house, I've got good health, I've got, you know, money, I can go on vacation, I got plenty of food, I don't worry about my next meal, don't worry about praying, give us this day our daily bread, I got more bread than I know what to do with. So they think they don't need God. That's part of the curse of being in an affluent nation. That's one reason in part of the world that is growing, Christianity is growing, beliefs and bounds, is people learn, they appreciate the daily essentials that we take for granted. They're excited. They're more grateful than what we are. They also are more receptive to the gospel. They realize there's a need in their life for more than just the essentials of life. All right. Don't do this one out loud, but think about this and try this at home. Define Christianity. We said we're going to teach people. Define Christianity. You take a piece of paper and you write out your definition of Christianity. And then flip it over on the backside. Now, here's one reason this teaching at school works better than at church. You could give them a test and you could have them another year if they didn't do good. In church, I can give you an assignment, the preacher can give you an assignment, you don't have to do anything. But I'm going to go ahead and say, flip the paper on the other side and say, I want you to answer the question, what is the Church of Christ? Could you write that answer out? I had a guy that called me a preacher, non-denominational preacher. He was just messing with me. He did that occasionally. He called me and he says, trying to disguise his voice, he said, "I'm new in town. I'm looking for a church. Tell me why I should go to your church." Y'all give me some of the reasons you would tell somebody. Just go ahead and tell me. We go. You know what he said? That's what they all say. Huh? That's what they all say. You're doing what I did. I gave you. He shot me down on everything I said. That's what they all say. All right, give me something else. We believe the Bible. He says, that's what they all say. That doesn't make you unique. They all say that. And you say, well, some of them don't. He said, that's what they all say. Why should you go to the Church of Christ? Tell me. Don't say we're friendly. Because you know what I'm going to say that? That's what they all say. By the way, that's not true either. Because here's what happens. Y'all know this. You have your congregation. This is a group of people that's been meeting here for a pretty good while. You know each other. You know your history. Somebody comes in. Somebody gets up and goes speaks to them. Maybe two or three. I don't know if y'all got people that get up and go speak to them. But then when it comes time to go eat somewhere, we've all got our friends already established, and you all go home, and the visitor gets left out. If you don't get the Christian, you get the Christian Chronicle? Well, send the director for the church to them, and they'll send everybody the Christian Chronicle free. How great a deal is that? It's the Church of Christ newspaper is what it is. It's just a great newspaper. They had two or three articles in there on different experiences that people have visiting churches where they go in and sit down and nobody speaks to. Man, I'm telling you, it's an eye-opening experience. We had one of our elders' wives was telling about her husband was speaking. He's the guy who head over the Potter children home. She always sits by him, and they always sit right here. You know, he has your designated pew. Now, see, y'all breaking tradition, because the night's VBS, and you're probably, some of you, out of your normal pews, but you can tell who's here and who's not by looking, and you know there's an empty spot, right? We're that way. But anyway, they always sit right here. So she goes, and she sits down, and waiting for her husband to come and sit down with her. Now, they're visiting in the church, and a woman comes in and she says, "That's my pew, second pew. I didn't think anybody fought for you." She says, "That's my pew." She says, "Well, okay, I'm sorry." She says, "That's where I always sit." And she stood there until this lady got up, a visitor, walked all the way down here and sat. You know who she was? Preacher's wife. Tell me somebody doesn't need to get her attention. But anyway, you sit down and say, "What is the Church of Christ?" I had somebody ask me. I worked at a little mission church over in East Tennessee. And she says, "What's the Church of Christ?" This lady did. I stammered and stuttered like I didn't have a clue. Y'all to try to figure that out. Put it in a word. How are you going to teach somebody if you don't know what you're going to teach? Did you have a lesson plan? I keep picking on you. Did you have a lesson plan? You just fly up in the CD pan. I shouldn't say that to a lady as elegant looking as you are. Anyway, you know what I mean by that. You have a teaching plan. Okay? We don't have a game plan, to be honest. We have a game plan to save the world. We don't have a game plan. We don't know what to do anymore. We're struggling. We really are. I am too. I'm in it with you, all right? But now, how much time I got?
8:20.
I'm quitting before then. All right. Is that right? Oh, I can't talk. Okay. I teach three classes at South Campus at Western, and there's some things that aggravates me at there and at church. What is this thing that what's recording me? I probably made all sorts of racket. I'll play with this. See, there's this thing that goes on now. I messed this up, I guess. There's a thing that goes on that drives me crazy. You walk up to people and you're trying to talk to them and they're going to... Now, that drives me crazy. I'll be honest with you. If you never believed that about that experiment with Pavlov's dogs being trained to slobber when the bell rings and they knew they was going to get food. We are trained as a society, if that thing dings, it doesn't matter what else is going on. You know this, you've seen this. Everybody started carrying these little stupid cell phones around. And you be in the church service, it still happens. And I always say, your friends ought to know you're in church, so what are they doing calling right now? But anyway, you'd be sitting in church and people's phone goes off, and it does. I say, wonder why they don't know you're in church. But anyway, it goes off. I expect this to happen at funerals and weddings. But now people don't have to have their cell phone to go off because they don't talk on their cell phones anymore. What do they do? drives me insane. Nobody talks anymore on a one-to-one level. They're standing in the midst of their friends and they're texting somebody, they're checking Facebook, they're doing this right here. They're checking Facebook while they're with other people. It's destroying, codes of civility. That's not what I'm looking for, but at work. It's destroying me. There's no code of conduct in this. So apparently we're making up as we go. And the all important thing is that thing in your hand. Now, old Mike Tenero, I know y'all know Mike. Mike Tenero has used the same corny joke for 30 years when he gets up and preaches. He says, all right, everybody hold the Bible up. I'm sure y'all saying this. Everybody holds your Bible up. Oh, and he'll say, well, is that a purse? No, that's one little, he's done that for 30 years. He's going to have to quit doing that because you know what people are going to start doing? They're going to hold their little, I sit beside a lady that's got a fancy little Bible on the little whatever you call the thing, big screen. It'd have to be big for me to see it now. But anyway, but you sit there, and here I'm preaching to people who are supposedly there to hear God's word. And some of them are looking at the Bible, but it's real easy apparently just to go like that and push another button and check your Facebook and check your messages. When did we become so important that we have to be in touch with everybody at all times? When did we get that important? Used to. You're going on a trip, you go out and you missed a stagecoach ride, you waited a week and you didn't get bent out of shape by it. What could you do? Now we miss the red light, we're angry at the world and we're ready to fight somebody because we're having to spend an extra 2 minutes. And now you've got to get a message. It doesn't matter whether you're in church or in class, you've got to get a message. By the way, what do those messages generally amount to? We generally can't even remember them anyway. But what's going on is we're focusing on this stuff. And let me show you how that's affecting us. They're not the smartest kids in the world and hiding things, and I'm glad. But I can't get them to understand that they can make it through an entire class without checking their phone. And they think they're smart and they'll be doing like this. They even cheat now doing that. I don't know whether they're texting somebody or they're Googling the answer, but they're sitting in college. You know what they're learning? Nothing. They're learning absolutely nothing. Which is very frustrating because I believe there are some things that we really ought to learn. But how do you convince people these are things that you really ought to learn? So you got this going on, this little tickety, tickety, tickety. By the way, I'm getting there. I know you're worried about me getting to the list. I'm getting there. It's just going to take me a while, which is normal. Kids are now showing up and they can't stay awake in class, not just college, in all levels of class. You know why? They lay their phone by their bed, by their pillow, on the pillow, on the nightstand, and all during the night, bring, they open, they wake up, they look at the message, and they got to answer right then. Isn't that mind-boggling? I mean, turn the thing off. If the only sound you need to really, really hear in the middle of the night is the fire alarm or the trumpet of God signing the end of the world. Amen. That's it. Every once in a while you need to wake up and see if your spouse is snoring, but that's another subject for another time. But kids are so addicted to these things. Now let me show you one more thing that is happening with this. This is affecting the way we remember. Part of the problem has already existed before we got the high tech stuff. Part of it is we're overloaded with knowledge, with information. We live in the information age. You You can get all sorts of newspapers. You got magazines. You got books. You got TV. You got all this radio. You got all this stuff bombarding you. And your brain is trying to figure out what's important, what's not. Well, now that people are being addicted to these things, here's what's happening. And I'm as guilty on some of this as anybody. I'm a weather fanatic. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I grew up on a farm and you just worried about whether or not it's going to rain. And you listen to... Now, here's what I do. I turn the computer on and I look at the weather forecast. And then I look at another weather forecast. And then I look at another one. Then I close the lid on my computer. Ask me 2 hours after I looked at it what the weather forecast is. I don't have a clue most of the time, but I can tell you the next 10 days, no rain. That worries me. Now, it's a big enough issue now. That worries me. Okay? But I look at this stuff and I'm like, and it took me a long time. I thought, well, good grief, this is aggravating. I just looked at it. And I'm thinking, well, it's because somebody pointed out, it's because I'm getting older. That is part of it. You know, we do lose some of our ability. But scientists have figured out that now we're not remembering stuff because if those of us who use a computer all the time, because our brain says, you just got to look it back up. You don't have to remember this. So our brain says, looked at it, don't worry about it. Google it later. I hope it's not picking this up. Anyway, y'all want me to say preach? Anyway, all right. Now, what's going on with this? This is frustrating because we're having all of these learning issues. You and I, whether we use high tech stuff or not, are bombarded with information. We've got all this stuff coming at us. We're not remembering things like we ought to. And I had one guy tell me, and it was kind of surprising. This guy's my age or a little bit older. He was so excited, but he said, you know, he said, you can become an expert on any subject in just a few minutes. Does it really count if you're an expert, if you can look it up and you can read it and you can do it if you don't remember it? Because if you can't read it and you haven't remembered it and you can't apply it later on, you can become an expert on it. Somebody looked at me weird and questioned if I said that correctly. The human brain in and of itself is an amazing thing. I've always heard that we only use about 20% of our brain capacity. I know better than that. I filled mine up and it was about to bust pretty quick at times. That's my opinion of the matter. But they tell us we just barely use, I don't know how else to cram more in, to be honest. I hadn't figured out now. If we're only using 20%, what's that other 80% doing? Now, they like to tell us that men use only half, one side of the brain. Women, they use both. They flip back and forth between logic and emotion. And men, I don't care if we just use a half brain. We've got by pretty good for a long time on this half a brain stuff. But back to this whole thing. Isn't it frustrating sometimes when you learn something And you got excited about learning it, and then later on something happens? Let me illustrate this. There's two books by a guy named Noel Friedman. Noel Friedman was a genius. I'm telling you, he was a genius. I wish he would live long enough to write a third book. He wrote this book on systems theory, how a church family works. He's actually a Jewish rabbi, but everything applies to this whole system, how church family works, how synagogue works, how organization works, all of this, how a family system works. It's fascinating stuff. And in this second book, The Failure of Nerve, powerful book, man. I'm telling you, one of the most exciting books I've read in a long time. Because he says, here's what happens in churches. Churches get hijacked by the person that is the weakest member, because churches want to do the right thing. And so you got somebody that gripes and complains, and the church's like, oh no, we don't want to upset them. We want to do the Christian thing, so we cater to them. And we, that's the worst thing he says we can do, because what do? When we cater to somebody that's a constant complainer, we empower them to do more. We don't help them to grow up. And man, I'm reading this and I'm so excited about it, and I can stand up here and tell you about that, but guess what happens in my daily life? I had a lady to complain. We'd kind of change the classes around for the adults at where I preach, and I was all excited about it. And here I am ready to teach, and she's like, "Why'd we change?" Well, I thought it was a good idea. Yes, that's about the way she said it. "Why you change?" "Well, this other class was working out fine." I said, "The other class is coming back. We're going to put it on hold during the summer months. We're coming back to it. It's okay. It'll be all right. I don't like it." Now, I spent a week worrying myself sick about somebody being unhappy, and then I'm like wanting to hit myself right in the forehead as hard as I can and say, "You dummy, you know what is going on here. That if you try to make everybody in church happy, who do you end up making happy? Nobody. And you never get anything done because you're always worried about somebody being offended about every little thing. And will this person continue to live if you don't go back, give them their way? Yes. It's not a life and death situation. And here I am losing sleep over this. And I know not to do that. Why do I do it?